Broadcasting live from the Business Radio X studios in Atlanta, Georgia, it's time for Atlanta Business Radio, spotlighting the city's best businesses and the people who lead them.
Lee Cantor here with Stone Payton, another episode of Atlanta Business Radio. Stone, and this is going to be a good one.
I have been looking forward to this show for so long. We have a studio full of some of the best and brightest in the management consulting arena. We have the good folks with us from UHY, and we're going to get a chance to meet the entire team. But first up on Atlanta Business Radio this morning, I want to introduce the fearless leader, Mr. Frank Fanello. How are you, man?
I am great. How are you?
Doing well, thanks.
Before we get too far into this, Frank, can you share a little bit about UHY? What are you guys doing for folks?
Sure. Well, UHY, we're a global professional services firm. We do financial statement audit, tax, and management consulting.
So that's what UHY's office here in Atlanta does, or that is a corporation?
Yeah, so we have 13 offices in the country. The Atlanta office primarily focuses on management consulting services.
But the firm does a lot of other things, right?
Right. So we're a traditional CPA firm. So we do financial statement audit, we do tax, we do business advisory services, transaction services.
All right. And as we know in the room, but I don't think our listeners know, so maybe now it's okay that we reveal it now, right? We have designs on doing a monthly series underwritten by UHY. Frank, what's the thinking behind that? And what are we trying to accomplish with that?
Well, you know, there seems to be a gap in pulling together information that's relevant as it relates to consulting. There's shows on financial services. There's shows on where to put your money. It's how, you know, HR topics. But you don't see a lot on what do you do to improve your business? How do you make it better every day? How do you improve and profit enhancement, grow your bottom line? And that's really what our goal is. And we want to make companies and individuals aware of the types of things that you can do to make your business better.
So it'll have best practices, you know, where people are going to tell the good, the bad, the ugly of how they dealt with certain situations and really educate the market.
Yeah, absolutely. The only thing I'll say is that we at UHY use a little different word than best practice. We use the word leading practice. And The main reason we do that is that when you hear the word best practice, it almost implies that once you implement it, you're done.
Right.
Right. And the reality is it's an evolving situation. So we want you to always be in a state of leading practice, and we teach you how to do that. So every day you're getting better and better at what you do.
All right. And the design of this may be still a little bit fluid at the moment. We'll get it dialed in, but I think we're going to do this the third Friday of every month at 10 o'clock. Regarding the format, I believe, is the intent to have people outside of UHY, clients and people out in the marketplace, come and share their experience and their insight?
Absolutely. So we're going to have each episode, we'll have a focus on a particular topic, and we'll bring in leaders from the community to participate in the event as well. And really, we want to help be a catalyst to bring people together to talk about things that are relevant and bring real world experiences to the table.
All right. That sounds like a lot of fun. Beats the heck out of working.
That's right.
All right. So I want to bring in some of the team that you brought with us. We're going to get a chance to meet them all and dive into a little bit about their specific area of expertise or domain, what they do, why they do it. But first, if we could just go around the horn and introduce them. And we'll start with David. David, tell us a little bit about yourself and what you're out there trying to do for folks.
Thanks. I'm David Barton. I'm a managing director, and I head up the internal audit risk and compliance practice at UHY nationally.
All right. And then next to you is Brad. Brad Baer.
Yeah, hey, good morning. Brad Baer. And I am an MD in our advisory practice and head up our global accounting automation practice. And so we, you know, help CFOs really bring automation, technology, efficiency to their team.
All right. Next up, we got Cindy Hanafay.
Yes, Cindy Hanafay. I'm a principal with UHY. I'm responsible for three service lines, project management, software selection, and enterprise optimization, which is our form of Lean Six Sigma process improvement.
Man, this is a pretty broad and far-reaching set of professionals here. What about the headliner? What about Amy?
Hi there. Amy Gallagher. I'm a principal with our resource solutions practice here in Atlanta. Technically, that means I'm the matchmaker. So I work with our clients to help them find variable resources. And then we also have a separate area to do direct hire search for our clients around financing and consulting.
And so three of these discipline areas have more casual dress. I see it has a really nice, they're collared shirts, but they're really nice casual shirts. David, you guys are a little more buttoned up over in your neck of the woods, or is this a reflection of you and your personality?
A combination of both.
Maybe we should have the other people answer that question.
Yeah. I didn't get the memo.
All right, let's do start with you, David, if you don't mind. Can you give us some insight into the kinds of challenges that you're trying to solve for your clients? What is the pain that we're trying to address there?
The biggest pain that my particular practice deals with is information security, cybersecurity. It's a buzzword right now, but so many companies are struggling with it and they can't seem to stay ahead of the curve. I mean, the breaches continue and they're new and they're different every single day.
Isn't that good job security?
It's very good job security. But aside from that, I mean, the biggest challenge that the folks are facing is they've implemented and invested in all kinds of technology to help secure the organization. And most of the newer breaches that we've seen in the last couple of years have not been because of technology failures. They've been because of people failures. And we like to say that what we try to do at UHY is to secure or make your human firewall more robust.
And then are you seeing Atlanta as a good market for the services?
Any market is good for these services because all companies are struggling with the same challenges. But
But doesn't Atlanta have some unique, the businesses here were in fintech. This is a kind of a hub for technology in a lot of areas.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. A lot of companies that do deal with credit card information, highly personal information. There's a lot of medical here as well. So, yeah, I mean, Atlanta is a target. Lots of, Fortune 50 companies that have to deal with a lot of personal information.
Frank?
Yeah. You know, I'd like to add, as you think about for the companies in the marketplace here, there's lack of a recognition that the reality at the end of the day, it just takes one person to click on one thing, link, email, flash drive, can lead to a cyber attack. And so even with the best technology in the world, hackers are always a day ahead, right? So the focus on the people and the human firewall, as David said, is one of the most critical things that an organization do to help prevent a cyber attack.
It's a good point to mention that the human, a lot of times it's a human problem. Somebody giving a password or using an easy password or, you know, just making a human error that is the cause of the problem, not some inherent flaw in the software.
Absolutely. Again, the major breaches we've seen have been not because of firewalls failing or routers failing or any of the technology that's in place. It's all about one person doing something, clicking through on a phishing email, getting a keylogger installed, which leads to the bad guys having a valid ID and password. So the firewalls aren't going to prevent that.
And so we're also not necessarily talking about, in most cases, maybe malicious intent. This is just failure to recognize and observe some key disciplines.
Correct. It's all about awareness and training, and that's really where we're trying to focus and help companies deal with those aspects.
All right, so walk us through at least the front end, if you don't mind, of an engagement. You get to have the conversation at some point, and what happens in the early stages?
The early stages, the first thing we do is a phishing campaign, an internal campaign where we design emails that would look like a phishing email coming from outside.
I love it.
So yeah. We're phishing, we're white hat phishing, as it were.
So you're sending something out so you can tell them, look, 18 people clicked on this?
Well, more like, yeah. The average actually is about 30% of
30%.
30% of employees.
And that's if you give them the heads up you're going to do that?
Or no. We don't give them
the heads up. You don't give them the heads up.
No, this is his marketing strategy.
Because we want.
It's like the window salesperson who sends the kids out with a BB gun. No, kidding.
No, we want a real assessment of what the vulnerability is, right? And across the board. So you think about people in security are well trained and they're very observant.
Right.
And they know
it's obvious to them.
Yeah.
Right.
It's not obvious to the executive assistant to the CFO.
Right. Or the CEO.
CEO, whatever. Right. Yeah. Whomever.
Okay. So now you do this test and then you go, oh, look, out of 130 people and you got their names, right? You know who those 30 people are. So then do you go, okay, let's educate everybody. Hey, you know that thing that said, you know, you won the trip to the Bahamas, that wasn't real. Ha ha. You know, they would have breached the computer and they would have had access.
Absolutely.
And then you do it again?
Well, the second part of it is once we have a baseline of what the vulnerability is and how many people
and you know their names.
And we know them. We don't out them. We do comprehensive training across
right.
the board.
Comprehensive.
Everybody.
Everybody.
In the organization.
They're going through their mandatory now security.
Correct.
Right?
Yep.
So now you do it again. At some point, you're doing this again, right?
Absolutely.
What's
so
the number? I know it's not zero.
At
the
some
next
point
time.
In the future, it becomes a program. It has to be a program. Just like I know you guys are familiar with advertising and advertising campaigns, right? It's not just a single ad that you
right.
do once a year.
Right.
You can't afford to do that.
You have to be as tenacious
people.
As the bad guys.
Exactly. Plus, you've got new people coming into the organization
right.
all the time, those kinds of things. And so, yes, we implement a campaign to constantly remind people, constantly keep them on their toes. By doing that, we lower the overall risk that something bad is going to happen as a result of a people failure.
Okay. Just for laughs, when you've done this before, you've done it in a lot of cases, what's the highest percentage of in the first go round? Like you mentioned, it's average 30,
mm-hmm.
but what's like?
I know of companies that
heard
have,
rumors of.
I know of companies yours. That have had up to 70% of people have clicked through
wow.
on a phishing email. When the bad guys have enough information and they're getting that information through social media and other areas.
Right.
I
mean, that's the thing. It's a challenge, a double-edged sword. You're trying to be out there and mm-hmm. talk to people. So you're trying to share information. And then they're exploiting that.
Absolutely, they are.
Yeah. As a matter of fact, so when you talk about a message from the CEO, the hackers are very sophisticated. So they will get to know what style or message that your leaders have. They'll design one that matches the look and feel. So as an individual, you know, if you're just looking at it without being incredibly intentional about it, you're going to click on it.
Right.
We even misspelled the name in the email address just to give some clues. But, you know, you're looking
at
it, looks and feels, right? And
yeah.
so almost all of them take the time to study and understand what happens.
So what I've done to kind of mitigate this risk, I just don't answer my emails anymore.
Nice.
And he's very
really
good at
well.
It. So,
he's made a commitment and he honors
stuff.
It.
You're a man of your word.
I am.
All right. So now that you have sufficiently scared the hell out of me, I have to ask, and I don't want you to take this the wrong way, but I get the sense that this was not even a career path when you went to school. So what is your backstory?
Well, you didn't. When did you go to school? Day? I don't think there were schools when you were growing
no,
up. Were there?
No. No, I had a log cabin
okay.
out in the middle of the woods.
Okay.
And, you know,
you worked on a farm,
what
right?
Was, what
Charlotte
was Moses
my,
like?
My teacher.
Sorry. But no, what, so, what was
how'd you get here?
Yeah.
How did I get here? Well, I fell into the whole audit and compliance area. I came through as a programmer trainee, was working for a company, and one of my friends who was an accounting major called me one day and said, hey, there's an opening for an EDP auditor. And I said, you know, I'm not an accountant. Why are you telling me about this? And he says, no, it's not accounting. I said, well, then explain it to me. It's all about, you know, looking at the controls and testing the controls on the systems. And I said, oh, okay. So that's how I fell into it with a large retailer up in North Carolina, worked my way through and got into consulting and ended up here.
Well, I mean, I get the idea that you really enjoy the work. You find it very rewarding.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
So what's your favorite part?
My favorite part is
sending those emails out.
Exactly. Getting creative.
Getting people fired, right?
No, not getting people fired. Getting creative and showing where the risks are, because so many folks, particularly entrepreneurs and folks who run the business, are so focused on, you know, increasing revenue and customer service and all those things that they don't really see the blind spots when it comes to security.
Right.
So making a system easy to use also makes it very vulnerable. So what we try to do is to help companies figure out how to balance security with ease of use and increasing revenue and so on.
And it is a full-time job because the bad guys are tenacious and they're looking for that weakness.
Absolutely. They're always one step ahead. And as soon as you implement some type of new security measure, like, you know, the virus protection software that so many companies offer, they start going around that and using social media and using social engineering to actually get into a system that way.
Yeah.
And just to add to that, too, if you think about it, it's not just at work. So the training that we're giving them is also helpful in their personal lives, too.
Sure.
So anyone could get into it.
I hadn't thought about
and
that.
Their,
yeah,
and their
sense.
Parents, personally.
Oh, yeah.
Absolutely.
They're the worst, right?
Yes. They're the biggest victims.
Right. Mm-hmm.
We all have aging parents, and our parents are victims to cybersecurity.
Well, and you can provide so much value in return so quickly. I know there's always more and more work to be done in this arena, like you described earlier in the conversation, but you are able to provide some immediate value very quickly.
Right, absolutely, because that first test, the first phishing exercise really points out, wow, this is worse than I ever dreamed it was. And then the awareness training goes on to show the people in the organization, wow, I never realized, you know, you said you were scared to death. You should see some of the looks of the faces of the people when we do these trainings. You know, yeah. The eyes get big and the jaw drops down and it's like, I didn't know they could do that.
Right. And because the people you're dealing with, they think they're smart and they think that it'll be obvious. They'll be able to figure it out. No
smart.
One's going to pull the wool over their eyes.
Yeah, gone are the days of, the prince from Nigeria sending you an email offering to give you $1 million if you just, you know, keep it inside the walls of the United States. But
all right. Cindy, tell us a little bit about your work. What are you out there doing for folks?
Oh, we're trying to guide companies through managing change.
Oh, my.
Yeah.
And people love change, right? That's what you found over the years?
Yeah, well, that's exactly what we find. They love change. You know, when we talk about change, every company that's growing or has a strategy change, we're talking about things like merger and acquisition integration, maybe divestiture, maybe putting in a new technology or just trying to improve their processes and make them stick. And what we find that managing that strategy down to the tactical level is challenging for companies.
Well, and I know you were teasing a little bit about everybody loves change, but the truth is in these large changes, sometimes there are pockets of people who are really looking forward to it, and maybe they have this kind of naive vision of what it's going to be like, and then when it really starts to happen, it's not quite the picture they painted for themselves, and you can start getting resistance even from that crowd. Is that accurate?
There's two schools of folks. We have those that say that this is the way we've always done it. We hear that a lot. And there's a school of folks that says, bring on the change. But when you start bringing it on, they're like, whoop, here's a put the brakes on. I don't like the change.
Yeah. Well, it's good for other people.
All right.
Well, you know, what's interesting is that change itself isn't what people typically get uncomfortable with. It's the uncertainty of the change. Mm-hmm. So in most organizations, as they're going through that type of change, they don't know, is this going to be a good thing for me? Is it going to be a bad thing for me? Right. Is my job going to get harder or easier? Am I going to lose my job? Mm-hmm. And I think how our firm handles it helps to mitigate that concern. Mm-hmm. Would you agree, Cindy?
Yeah, he's talking about culture and engaging the people early on in the process of what you're trying to undertake, having clear communication lines often, frequently.
Is that it true? Helps. Like you can't communicate too often in this kind of
business. This is so true.
Right. Because a lot of times maybe the executives think like, I don't know if we want to tell them all that because it might frighten them. They might leave or whatever the ramification in their head they think it is. But you find that it's better to communicate often.
Hey, we worked with companies who have downsized in the past and it's painful, but it's more painful if you keep everyone in the dark. It's less painful if people know what to expect and what's next.
Mm-hmm. Well, if you don't tell them, they'll like fill in the blanks themselves, right?
Yeah.
and minds get a little creative when you fill in the blanks.
We actually had a client that they knew before they've hired us that they had to reduce their workforce by 40 people. And so when we got there, they said, well, what should we do? When should we tell them? And our advice was tell them day one. And they're like, well, people are going to leave. They're going to jump ship. And I said, watch, they won't happen that way because they'll understand they can start to plan for it and make sure you know, we have regular communication, help them get ready for it. And throughout the project, we only had two unwanted turnover during the project because, again, they knew when it was ending, they knew what to expect, and it really worked well. And we were able to have a successful project that way.
And to Frank's point, we also, as part of that process, we helped them look for new jobs going forward in the future, right? So we were able to come into the project and really think end to end and make sure we're thinking about the consequences it's going to have on everybody. So,
and as a human being, not just this kind of faceless organization that's just, you know, haphazardly cutting people.
We worked with one of our clients who was lifting and shifting a plant from one state to the other. It was a small community. About 190 people were going to lose their job.
Right. And that's a big impact community.
It is a huge impact. But we worked with the state. We worked with the local government. And we had 90% of the people placed by the time we shut the plant down. Mm-hmm. A few of them retired. Done. And the rest transferred over with the new plant facility.
Now, when you're first visiting with senior level executives and kind of thinking through this at a high level, do you ever run into this attitude expressed or not, that, look, we're going to change this, we're going to do this, and my strategy is because I said so. And you have to kind of sell the senior level execs on a more structured...
Oh, no, that has never happened.
Crazy talk.
Because, well, and in their defense, in their mind, they may not have to personally change a heck of a lot. This is just what they do. You know, we're doing another merger, we're doing but then you got the people down at the bottom that are going crazy. Yeah?
Amy and I were actually talking about this last week. Sometimes senior executives don't know tactically what it takes to get there. And they think that here's the strategy, make it happen. But they sometimes don't realize what's happening down at the workplace.
And especially if this happens often or frequently, then the scar tissue of the people that go through it, you got to manage that too. And that's a whole other kind of, because you were talking about culture, how important that is. I mean, how does that impact culture? You do this a few times.
Well, we've seen companies who've regularly every few years do a right sizing is what they're now calling it. We see right sizing, but you start taking polls within the company, their passion for the company, it diminishes after they've been through the...
Even if they survived it.
Even if they survived
it. Because they start getting kind of, that survivor guilt. Yeah, sometimes.
It's like, my friend next to me lost his job. I got to keep mine. But, you know, you wonder, are you next?
Right.
So you must see some of the same patterns over and over as you work with more and more organizations. Are there a couple of things that when you walk in, and you may not communicate this overtly, but you might nudge Amy or Brad or somebody if they're in there with you. Just, here we go again. What are some of the common mistakes that you see?
Some of the common mistakes that we see is thinking that you can install a tool and it will change your organization. It will, but not like you expected it.
But they read a book that said that that would happen.
They did. And David and I actually have a client we're working on. David?
Yeah, we have a client, but I was going to go back to my favorite phrase.
Oh, yes. Yep,
here we go.
I had a mentor early in my career, and one of the things she said stuck with me to this day. She said, a fool with a tool is still a fool. So basically, you know, all the technology in the world is not going to solve your problem. There is no such thing as a silver bullet, as much as executives want to think that. The software salespeople are really great people, but they're in the business to sell software. And we're in the business to help companies improve their processes before they decide which software they want. So again, it's not about a silver bullet. You can't just go out and buy a piece of software, install it, and expect your business to change and all your problems to be solved. There's hard work that goes into preparing for any kind of a new system implementation.
Exactly. And that starts with your people. That starts with your culture. So putting a tool in place to take yourself from a decentralized organization to a centralized organization is not going to get you there. You need the people to go alongside and your processes. So what we like to do first is to optimize those processes, bring the folks along with us, help us design what those new processes look like. So we're automating really good processes. We're not making really bad processes faster.
Yeah. And one of the things we often find when we go through that process, and Cindy's alluded to this, is enrolling the people doing the work now in the future state in the solution. Because often the people doing the work know what's working, they know what's not working. A blind spot that we often see is, a consulting firm comes in, doesn't take into account what the people are doing, and just saying, we're going to go here and do this, whether it's technology, whether it's process. And then, the people doing the job that have to do the new process, they don't adopt it. And so it becomes, a disaster. So it's, Cindy, I don't know if you want to comment to that. I know you've seen lots of that through the projects we've done.
Yeah, that's the one thing is, what we want to do is make sure that the people are passionate and involved. So they adapt with us along the way, and then they own the processes when we walk out.
Because it's then becomes their process.
They own it. We don't want to come back and do the same project over again. Right. We want us to stick. Bring us back for something else, but don't bring us back for that. Make it stick and learn from it. And we want them to put in a form of continuous improvement, constantly looking at those processes. And the leading practice comment that Frank said earlier, we want them to learn how to continuously improve so that they are on the edge of their own leading practices.
Well, and if you get some initial resistance or pushback from the rank and file, especially early on, maybe you ought to listen to it. They might have they really might have a good idea that will make the change better, right?
They often do, yes, absolutely. Some of the best ideas come from your internal subject matter experts, and they sometimes don't have a voice. And when we work together, we give everyone a voice.
You make it safe for them to say, hey, you know, you got to take a look at this.
And many times, you know, the executives, with all their great intentions, don't really know the detail of what their people who are working in these, in the trenches, actually do. They have this idea that...
Right. Well, they have an outcome in their head.
Correct.
Right.
They have an outcome, but they also don't have all of the details of all of the workarounds that are occurring. Right. And we've seen this time and time again in our consulting engagements, where we start to map the process and we lay it all out on this long table for everyone to come in and look. And the executives are going, I didn't know we do that.
Why are we doing that?
You mean we do this? Yes, sir, you do this.
And one of the best compliments our teams received in the past is that they, at the end of the engagement, the staff was like, hey, you guys are really great. We enjoyed having you here, but you know, we're the ones that came up with all the ideas and the solutions.
Right.
Like, okay.
That's great.
We like that.
Absolutely. Right. You want it to kind of be invisible in that regard.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I wanted, if Cindy could talk on one other point, I think something's really important about transformation that we didn't touch on, and I think so many people lose sight of, is how you actually manage the project itself and the change. Mm-hmm. Can you touch on that real quick,
Cindy?
Sure.
So what's most important, and oftentimes companies, and I see this with big companies too, not big, small, doesn't matter. They untake a project and they don't really plan for it. There's no real project management infrastructure put in place to ensure that you're capturing all your issues, that you're solving those issues, and that you don't derail your project. So what we recommend is putting a good infrastructure in place so you can mitigate that risk. A communication plan early on, a change management plan. So every project that we take is on a good, solid foundation of project management. We follow the project management body of knowledge, the framework. We've created our own methodology, and we execute all projects that way to ensure that we stay within our iron triangle. I taught class yesterday, so this is fresh in my mind, with the iron triangle of scope, time, and budget.
Yeah. Yeah, and to Frank's point, I mean, that's one of the big gaps that we often see when we come into organizations is that, you know, if we're working with the office of CFO and they don't have any project management expertise, that, you know, they just think, oh, well, I'll just have Joe, you know, he can help manage this project. And, you know, they're you know, Cindy instructs in this and gets people certified. We do require all of our team members to get project management certified, but there is a science behind this, right? And so unless you know it's there, there's going to be this blind spot, and then you can quickly lose control of projects. And Spain, I'm sure, I know, Cindy, you gave some statistics at a presentation earlier this year on failed projects. Yeah. What are the statistics out there?
The top five reasons projects failed, number one is lack of project sponsorship. Number two is a lack of a project infrastructure and a lack of tracking issues and budgets. So those are some of the top five reasons.
And what percent fail? As it's huge, right?
57% of the projects fail because of the lack of one of those top five.
Well, and those are real dollars when a project failed.
That, you got it.
Those are some serious dollars. All right, so Brad, what's your role in all this, man?
Yep. So, I mean, I work really, the concepts that Cindy talks about, transformation and really improving efficiency and automating, we work very closely together, and I focus really in the office of the CFO to bring technology to the way they run their business. And you know, it was interesting. I was at Denver yesterday speaking at an event, and there were some folks there from LinkedIn. And one of the technologies that we implement in our accounting automation practice is really focused on accounting. And his question was, you know, this seems like basic stuff. Why aren't people leveraging technology like this to really help the office of the CFO? And, you know, the reality is that a lot of the focus in accounting organizations has been on the FP&A folks who are doing the reporting and the analytics and the big data. And, you know, it's great. And you know, that can add a lot of value. But typically 80 to 90% of CFO organizations are accountants that are actually, you know, closing the books and doing journal entries and managing the month-end close. And they're the last to be invested in. So you have, you know, these kind of back office people that often have been ignored, and, you know, they're managing their business with Excel spreadsheets and email. And, you know, one of the companies that was there yesterday was a multi-billion-dollar company. And she was proud to say, we don't have an ERP. And I'm like, what do you mean you don't have an ERP? Like, how are you managing your business? So
what's an ERP?
What's an ERP? You're the IT guy. What's ERP?
I was just, for the listeners, Enterprise Resource Planning System.
Yes. So it's fun to come to these organizations and help them look at the way they're doing their business in a whole different way, leveraging technology.
So now, is it a challenge to get that kind of personality type to buy into the change that's required in order for them to kind of be the leading practice in this area?
Yeah, I mean, what we often find is, you know, especially, and I'm looking at Amy here as well, I mean, as she's working on recruiting and, you know, all the different generational areas with the millennials to the, I guess, what, the baby boomers? What? Where are we?
We're generation, baby boomers.
Gen,
baby boomers.
Gen X. I think we got it all. Dave, what are you?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. So, he's a, yeah. Depends on the day.
I'm picking on David today. But it really depends on, you know, there's always that thought leader, whether it could be the CFO, the chief accounting officer, it could be the controller, or even the person doing some of the work. And they're, you know, they're tired of what's going on. And so it's always interesting to see that kind of the project sponsor can range from up top to someone boots on the ground.
Yeah, if you look at the environment today, which, you know, most of the ERPs today don't do this, and so you're looking at tools outside of it. But if an activity is manual and it's recurring, right? So the same type of activity happens period after period, time after time, then that is something that should be automated because there's no reason to spend human capital on that. One of the things we talk about in Lean is this concept of untapped potential. So you hire these great CPAs, people who've done these, worked really hard in school, passed the CPA exam, and you bring them in and they start doing accounting entries and they spend their time manually ticking and tying all this information. It's not adding value to them. It's not really adding value to the organization. Let's automate that and let's allow them to use their brains and their skills to help analyze that data to provide value to the organization and change the perception of these accounting organizations from this last to get invested in, you know, kind of the rote tactical activities to something that adds value to the company.
But they all have spreadsheets, right, Frank?
They love spreadsheets.
They do. Yeah.
And then, you know, the numbers are powerful. You know, a lot of what we do is really quantify. When we come in to help a client, we take a look at, you know, kind of the current state and, you know, how much time are we spending on non-value add activities like preparing reconciliations, preparing journal entries, matching data manually in Excel spreadsheets. And we typically see, you know, 80 to 90% of the effort of these, you know, CPAs and, you know, highly trained, educated individuals is focused on cutting and pasting and pivoting and,
right.
and be looking up. We did an event here 3 or 4 months ago, and there was a global medical software company in the event. And we asked, you know, what percentage of time your prepare versus analyze report paradigm. And they said, we spent 110% of our time just trying to get things done. Like, we don't have any time to really look at the business. And
that's what moves the needle in the company.
Yeah.
You need them to be looking
ahead.
You
got it.
Now, isn't some of the challenges in the technology is that it can capture so much information that you just kind of are swimming in data that you don't know what's important anymore because it all seems important because there's so much of it and you can count it all now.
Yes. I mean, a great, great question. And the critical piece that we, you know, when we implement a solution for a client, you know, it's critical to really have performance management metrics, KPIs, and really figuring out what information do you need to run the business. So before, you know, you start with the end in mind, just when we help companies go through transformation, you know, you talk with the different stakeholder groups, the executive team, maybe the middle management team, the people doing the work, and really understand what do you need to run the business? So what type of information do you need to take action on? That's where we often see clients fail is, you know, they have like these lagging indicators, you know, last month we did this or that, but okay, well, what are you going to do with that? How are you going to improve? You don't have enough level of detail. So to answer your question, you have to really be clear on what are the 3 to 5 key metrics that you want to measure, and let's make sure the system's going to get out of this. And to Frank's point earlier about leading practices, this is a living, breathing process. This is not a set it and forget it, because your business is going to change. And if you don't really know how it's changing, you're going to be, you know, one of the, I'll go down a little tangent here. We had someone from one of the big three automakers here speak 4 or 5 years ago at our financial leader seminar we do over at the Home Depot. And she was a big executive at this company, and they were one of the ones that went bankrupt. And she was saying that, you know, this is in 2007-08, you know, when all craziness was going on. And she was saying, our scorecards were green, but every quarter we were losing billions of dollars. And then it was just like,
that wasn't a red flag.
Yeah. Wow. I mean, I don't know, Frank, if you have any comments on that. It was fascinating to see how you can get astray very quickly. And, you know, with the smartest guys in the room.
Yeah. You know, unfortunately, most companies will set up metrics, but then they don't have the right behavioral routines around those metrics to ensure that they're looking at the data properly, right? So how frequently do you meet to discuss it? What are the actions, as Brad mentioned? Then what's the accountabilities around it? We had a client that...
And don't you have to revisit, are these the right metrics to begin with? Like, you have to check that. Just because it was the right metric last year, it could be irrelevant this year.
Lee, absolutely. You know, if you're following the right procedures, that will happen as a matter of course. if you're reviewing them really every day and you start to see, well, wait, I'm hitting 100%, whether it's one that I'm trying to improve something, so my goal should get bigger,
right?
Or I'm trying to prevent something and I'm dropping. If it's at a certain stage where it becomes stable, well, let's, you know, maybe we check that less frequently. Let's move a new one in that's going to push the needle forward.
But the, like the company you were mentioning that it was green every time. So every time it's green, they're high-fiving, like, look, let's have a party. We're killing it. And then they're losing money. Who says that the emperor has no clothes here, that, hey, we must be looking at the wrong thing?
Well, you know, that kind of goes back to the accountability, because what typically happens in that environment, so those dashboards are green. And so the people that do the work look at it and they go, okay. Leadership just glances at it and go, okay. But nobody's saying, well, what does the metric actually tell us?
But somebody knows that they're losing, right? Somebody in the company knows, hey, this isn't good. We're losing money here. And how does that not bubble up to somebody going, hey, maybe we're not counting the right things here?
There is a phenomenon called a diffusion of responsibility. And it's a human behavior that occurs.
Is this survival instinct?
Well, as soon as you get three or more people together, the likelihood when an issue comes up or you see something, our nature is to go, well, if it's me, Brad, David, Amy, and Cindy, I'm going to go, oh, you know what? David has that. He's looking into that.
You're just thinking it. You're not kind of.
Yeah, like it comes to my mind. I know I need to handle it. But you know what? David, I'm sure David has the ball in that. And David's thinking, well, I'm sure Amy has the ball in that. And Amy's going, I'm sure Brad has the ball in that. Meanwhile, nobody has the ball. Right. And so period after period, month after month, the problem just keeps getting bigger, bigger and bigger.
And that goes to Cindy's earlier point about communication and clarity of messaging, that everybody's got to be clear on what their role is and communicate with everybody else.
And oftentimes, just right back to the KPIs, people don't understand what they mean.
And or they think they understand. Maybe Brad thinks it's one thing, but Frank thinks it's something else. And they each think that they're doing it right.
I walked into a manufacturing plant a couple of years ago, actually Frank and I did, and we were reviewing the plant layout and so forth and saw a whole bunch of, you know, metrics and graphs and charts. And we're like, and they said, yeah, we're doing really well. And I started looking at the graphs. I'm like, no, you're not.
Like, it was obvious to you at a glance, right?
There's something called the rule of seven here. You forgot about that. And you do have a problem. We need to stop and look at this. So they don't really understand. They see the pretty charts and graphs, but they don't really necessarily understand. And they don't understand how to drill down to the root cause of the problem.
Right. And the real problem.
The real problem. Where did it start?
Not the symptom of the problem.
Let's not put a Band-Aid or a little Neosporin on it. Let's go down to the root cause.
And also, if you think about some companies, they aren't even necessarily encouraging their people to take a look at challenging what's going on. So they might just think, well, my job is to, you know, process this invoice every month.
I do this task.
This is my task.
Right.
And then
I'm supposed to do it 100 times. Mm-hmm. And then
check my box.
And I get paid at the end of the week.
That's where those behavioral routines come in, are very important in business from the top down. Teaching people how to look at it regularly, how to address it, how to go to the root cause, that continuous improvement.
And that. Critical thinking skills are so important.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Oh, go ahead.
I was going to say, and also just how their role and what they're doing impacts the upstream and the downstream of the organization. And those are the, you see companies purposely not teach that. And those are, you know, indications of potential fraud and other issues too. So.
Yeah, there's also this concept of unintended consequences.
Right. That happens occasionally, right?
Yeah, every now and then. And you'll see companies make a decision on limited information. So we were working with a global company that had their shared service center in Costa Rica, and it was for accounts payable. And one of the team's job was to handle issues that came in to the help desk for accounts payable. And their metrics on their response rate were phenomenal. They got bonused on it, by the way. Every time that they hit, you know, response rate within 24 hours, they were golden. The problem is that if they didn't have an answer at the end of 24 hours, they would close the ticket. If they hadn't gotten a response from somebody, their part was done. They couldn't do any more. And so meanwhile, everybody in the organization is screaming, vendors aren't getting paid, but they're hitting their metrics. So, you know, the whole concept of having the right metrics with the right accountabilities and the right behavioral routines, you need them all. It can't just be any one element of it.
And I bet you we could do a whole episode just on incentives and the ramifications of
absolutely. Compensation drives behavior,
yes,
right?
At the end of the day.
unless you have adequate management and accountabilities.
I think you're right. I think we could do it. Maybe we will. So, Amy, are you the den mother for this band of renegades?
I don't know.
I get the sense that you might be the glue, and without you, the whole opera falls apart.
Is that well, so true. Sometimes. Thank you, guys. Well, it's actually a pretty mutual relationship, I would imagine. So, yeah, really what my group is a little bit different. There's some uniquenesses to it. So oftentimes when our clients need my resources, these are clients who already know that they have some sort of gap on their team, or there's a skill set or capability that they don't have readily available. So they can call our experienced consultants to step in. These are accountants who have controller level experience, director level experience to step in and really help those clients with getting from point A to point B. And they're really there just to help them get through that to get over that hurdle or get that task accomplished.
Like on a project?
Yeah, it's a project by project type of solution. And you know, we've had the benefit of being in the market doing this for 10 years. So we have an incredible network of professionals that work with us over and over again. And they're employees of the firm, and they just go out and help these clients, and they roll up their sleeves, they dig in, they know the technology, they know Excel, they've been trained in cybersecurity. So they're really out there doing doing the legwork for companies that need the extra set of arms and legs.
And occasionally, Amy steps in and helps those of us on the internal team with
we are
demand,
her clients.
Supply and demand.
Yeah. Well, there's always change. I mean, Cindy's team implemented a perpetual inventory process for a company, and when they were finished, they recognized the person there at the company who was supposed to maintain this new process and manage the metrics totally didn't buy into it. He'd been there for like 25 years.
After
loved,
the fact?
Oh, yeah. I mean,
so you thought everything was going
well? No, she knew the whole time.
We knew he wasn't playing.
That was part of their risk. They knew that the whole time.
Cindy can spot him.
Oh, yeah. Yes.
Oh, yeah.
So we were able to make sure that we had another person there when they finished the implementation of that, just to make sure that that didn't happen, because we didn't want the client's investment just to go down the drain. Because
that happens, that there could be a saboteur.
We've been a part of that too. We've experienced that on a couple of projects, but we, with our really good project management infrastructure in place, we log those issues on a private log. We talk to our project sponsor. We keep them well aware of what's going on throughout the life cycle of the project.
Because you're managing their expectation as well. Like you'll end up taking the hit of the failure, and it could be kind of a saboteur in the organization.
Absolutely.
Right?
And we want to bring that to their attention so that
ahead of time.
So when we walk out, that they have someone there to take over.
But it's an important point, or maybe an important discipline to observe in planning and executing major change efforts. You can have the rank and file engaged. Mm-hmm. You can have senior level executives allocating their resources, expressing, modeling, rewarding, all the stuff you're trying to teach them to do. But, sometimes those mid-level managers, I mean, they can untrain them quicker than you can train them.
Absolutely. One thing we don't want is for the employees to fall back into their old ways. And unless you have a good accountability structure in place, an optimal performance management system is what we call it, then you will fall back into place, into old practices, and you're going to add more suboptimal processes into the workflow again.
Yeah. And one of the things about, and Amy can talk about, is that the profile of the people that are part of Amy's practice are usually folks that have kind of been through their career, they've risen to, you know, a senior level within the organization, and now they're at a place where they say, you know what, I really just want to go, I like rolling on my sleeves, I like being in the work, I want to use my expertise to go help others. They typically work at the direction of a client. So, for example, we're working on a global company again with operations in Costa Rica. And so we had one team that was out there doing the consulting work on the process improvement side. But they also needed their resources to help support that project. And they also recognized that some weaknesses. So Amy was able to help provide them a team that kept the operations running while we were focusing with their folks on the actual root cause of what was happening. And so it's really a great compliment to everything we do.
Absolutely. And the other part to that is that because they have so much experience, they're able to bring additional ideas and recommendations to the people running these departments.
Fresh eyes.
Absolutely. Yeah. Fresh eyes. And they've seen it. So they're in there really to help. And that's what they do a great job with that.
Lee, I really think if we're going to be an effective partner for UHY, we're going to need to do some broadcast work from Costa Rica.
That's right. That's it. We have to immerse ourselves in this whole operation.
No, the one thing I've noticed with you all, you're givers, and it never stops. You give, give, give. I appreciate it so much.
Well, I'll tell you one thing I didn't anticipate, and I guess maybe I should have. I knew we were going to be visiting with experienced professionals who also had specific expertise in specific domains. I guess I didn't anticipate how much you guys work together and lean on each other. Can you speak to that just a little bit more before we wrap?
Absolutely. I can start because I've got a great example. You know, Brad heads up the accounting automation, and a lot of times those things that he's trying to implement from a technology standpoint will impact the controls. And if it's a publicly traded company, Sarbanes-Oxley is right there and at the forefront. So the changes, the resistance to change sometimes come in the form of not wanting to mess with those controls that everybody has worked so hard to get in place. And it'll change the way they're tested. It'll change the way they're, you know, authorized, all of those kinds of things. So it has to be a lockstep effort. It's not just, hey, can we make these changes? It's, can we make these changes and still provide the level of control that the executives can sign off on at the end of the day for their Sarbanes-Oxley?
Yeah, you know, as a matter of fact, as you think about, as we built the organization and we built this consulting group, we did it with intention. And we said, you know, it's really a system. And what we see all too often is that consulting firms will focus so narrowly on their expertise that they miss the broader picture, right? The unintended consequence. Right. Right. What else does it mean? And so if I'm a pure Lean Six Sigma firm, well, I'm not thinking about Sarbanes-Oxley and internal controls, because I'll tell you, most internal controls under Lean would be considered waste, mm-hmm. right? It's rework. It's a redundancy in the overall process. And so when we did this, we said, how do we serve our clients? And so we always start with the end in mind. And where are the gaps that we're seeing in our clients? And so a couple of things that we saw in our conversation with clients were, one is that they felt like the services they were receiving were very very siloed. Number two, they felt that, hey, when we come to serve, when clients, the way a project is actually managed is inconsistent. We want to make sure that there's an ability for whether it's a David or a Brad or an Amy, that the projects are managed in the exact same way. And so we brought Cindy's team on board to help not only serve our clients from a project management perspective, but we also said, well, if we're going to do this for our clients, we better do it internally. Right. So we use those systems for everything we do, not just when we're serving clients. And then finally, we said, how do we make sure that there's communication between the organizations, making sure that when David does see something, he knows that Cindy's team can help and that Brad's team can help and that Amy's team can help. And the reality is that our communication is very strong, and we're incented to grow the practice, not just our individual service lines, but we want to grow the firm. And at the end of the day, we only want to grow the firm because we really want to help our clients. We are all driven off of seeing that end of that day, that client better today than they were when we started with them. So.
Yeah, and one of the things that I love is that when we come to serve our clients, you know, we can holistically provide a solution, whether, you know, being part of a global CPA and professional services firm, we have audit expertise, we have tax expertise. One of the big things we're seeing for global organizations out there is some changes in the way they manage and account for intercompany transactions. And so I'm able to lean on, you know, our global international tax partner to come in and help. So, you know, it's really about serving the client and getting them what they need when they need it, getting them the best in the world and not worrying about, okay, where's the revenue fall? And who, you know, do we have someone in this group that may have seen this before, read a book on it? It's, we're going to get you the best resource in pulling together all the expertise of our team to drive just great results for
our clients. This holistic approach with, you know, a dream team of, you know, skilled specialists seems like you're getting the best of all worlds.
Yeah, I would say thank you. And that's really what we want. And you're seeing it here with the leadership team, but this goes down into the throughout our organization and everybody that works here. And, you know, we're talking a lot about, you know, business processes and, you know, metrics and accountabilities, but we also like to make sure that our team isn't so narrowly focused on just those skills. So we have folks on our team that are industrial engineers. We have folks that are chemists. Why would we need a chemist? Because they understand formulas, they understand things come together, and then they've added to their skill set over time that they've actually served internally in large corporations. And so by having that diversity of thought and then the ability, it drives communication. Wow, wouldn't it be interesting if we talked to Michael about his thoughts on this? And all of a sudden you get ideas that would never have happened with a homogeneous population of expertise.
If somebody wants to learn more about the organization and website?
It's www.uhy-us.com.
Good stuff. And then individually, if you want to go around the room and share maybe LinkedIn or best way to reach you individually, let's start.
Sure. For me, it's IT Controls Freak on Twitter.
Yeah. Yeah, we got to talk about that.
I don't know what to do with that one. Aren't you not going to give your address up in the mountains? You're not going to give it, no. Okay. I guess it's a bbear, double B-A-E-R at uhy-us.com.
And mine would be C. Hannafy, H-A-N-N-A-F-E-Y at uhy-us.com.
And I can be reached at, well, office number for just any of us is 678-602-4400. And I can be reached at F-F-E-N-E-L-L-O at uhy-us.com.
Great. And you can reach me at A. Gallagher, A-G-A-L-L-A. G-H-E-R at uhy-us.com.
Good stuff. Well, thank you all for being part of the show today. This is Lee Cantor for Stone Payton. We will see you all next time on Atlanta Business Radio.